And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is September 20th, and it is exactly 9 days until my birthday. Exactly 9 days until my birthday, Hutch.
Your 53rd birthday?
My 53rd birthday is not correct.
No, it's correct.
No, this is why you teach Spanish, because you're terrible with math.
You know, hablo inglés.
Weren't you a math teacher when you first started teaching?
Sí, por un año.
Jesus, what a jerk. Who invited this guy anyway? So sitting next to me is my beloved friend, Ryan Hutchins, varsity soccer. What is it you coach? Basketball, right? You coach basketball at Deering.
I'm the center.
Hutch coaches the varsity wrestling team. He has been on the podcast several times, and people have asked me not to have him back on, but he's back tonight. And we also have a very special guest tonight, a guy who is really reviving football one flag at a time in Portland. Josh Wolfgram, who runs the Portland Youth Football League flag football program, and has seen an increase in numbers. How many kids do we have in that now, Josh?
We're at 130 this year.
130 kids this
yep.
year.
Yep.
So what was it last year? Was it?
Last year was right around 126, 127, something like that.
Yeah.
So pretty on par with last year.
Yeah.
So we started with 32 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So
Did you start the program?
Actually, I didn't. Aaron Brady, who is now returned to coaching this year, started the program 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And he just joined the board with PYFL and said, I'd like to start a flag football program. He did it for kindergarten and first grade.
Yeah.
And and I took over after that.
It's pretty cool because it's a non-contact, what a lot of parents have troubles with, and the common thing is the concussions. And so it gives them another option all the way up to sixth grade.
Yep.
Is it sixth grade? Is that when it stops?
It is sixth grade now, yeah. It was kindergarten, first grade for the first 2 years, and then went second and third.
Yep.
And then after that, went to fourth and fifth, and then we had sixth last year.
Yeah,
so,
okay. So it gives them then, once they go beyond that, then it's a tackle option only,
yeah.
Right?
That's kind of the line in the sand right there, is that after sixth grade, they can go to tackle.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this, when Portland got rid of football, tackle football at the middle school level, this kind of came about, right? It was around the same time?
I think the timing is right around there. I don't think the two are related, but I think the timing is pretty close to that.
Yeah.
Actually, that's when PYFL took over the middle school program, when Portland pretty much stopped fielding the teams.
Yeah.
And so then PYFL took over basically fielding the teams and took over all responsibilities for it. So.
Yeah. Well, it is good to see that there's an option for a lot of kids, and I know it's a hot debate, and it's a it's an ongoing medical research topic as well. So
it is definitely a hot debate that I am I'm part of almost every single week. I'm reminded of how hard of a debate it is, and how happy everybody is that there's flag. And so, like I always keep saying though, is that our goal is to try to raise football participation in Southern Maine. That's been my goal when I started this. So my goal is to try to get the kids to understand football, love football, and then hopefully move over to tackle at some point when I feel that they're ready.
Yeah. Do you? I don't know if you even have the perspective of this, but is it statewide? Are football numbers dropping, or are programs dropping at the middle school level? Are they following Portland's lead and not having middle school programs? Do you have any idea about that?
I have a small idea. I don't have any numbers on me, but I do know that there's other programs that have moved away from school representation and gone to more of a youth tackle representation.
Sure.
So, South Portland, I believe, does as well. I think that's kind of a trend. I think numbers are dwindling in some ways around the state.
Yeah. So the guy that just walked in, he walked in late, and I'm not sure if he does this in his business or not, but he is right now. He's running. There's also a girls' option, which I kind of love about this. Is that there are girls' teams. Moni, how many? It's Moni Hang.
Yeah. Hey. Hi.
Hey. So how many girls teams do we have in the league right now?
So just my team, we have 25.
Yeah.
And I had to turn down a couple girls because I don't have the coaching to support all of them.
Yeah.
So I think league-wise, probably maybe almost 30.
Yeah. Yep. Do you find yourself having to go to other towns to get kids, or are you just running right in the city of Portland?
No, I've been, because we're so new,
yep,
I go out and I just recruit.
Yeah.
you know, girls that play basketball with my daughter,
yep,
or softball.
Yep.
And I would just go to their parents that, yep, I see sitting at the stands, and I said, "Hey, I'm putting together an all-girls flag football team. I'd love to have her on, yep, our team." And a lot of them are open to it.
Yeah.
But a lot of them needs a lot of convincing because, sure, when you think of football, they get nervous. They think it's very physical.
Yeah.
And I really have to walk the parents through the process.
Sure. So, I mean, can girls play high school football? Can they move on to tackle football?
Yes, they can, but not very many play. There's an element of physicality that girls can't bring to it, basically. And sometimes you see them as possibly a place kicker,
yep,
sometimes maybe a wide receiver. But to be honest with you, in my entire coaching career, I have not had one girl play for me. But I've seen girls that have played, and I think there's a place maybe as a place kicker or as a wide,
sure,
receiver. But not many play.
I don't know if anybody recognizes that voice, but it is a legendary coach in the state of Maine, and I know you love it when people brag about you in front of your face. I'm saying that tongue in cheek because I believe you to be a humble man from everything that I've heard and seen. And but John Wolfgram, Chevers football. You're still doing Chevers football.
I'm an assistant there.
You're,
yes,
assistant,
yeah,
coach. Are you defensive coordinator?
I am
at this point. Yep. Is sitting at the table with us, and really, you are our star tonight. But really, it comes down to your program is only as good as what Josh and Moni and everybody else is doing in towns like this. Am I right?
There's no question about it. And, talking about the flag football piece, I believe since I began coaching back in 1971,
yeah,
that a flag football program has to be a big part of the development of your program.
Yeah.
And for a lot of reasons. Just when kids are that young, when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, they're not ready to have the contact that football involves,
sure,
for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
They're not physically ready. You have a lot of mismatches in size and things like that, and you're asking kids to perform skills that they're not really ready to perform.
Sure.
And and that's why the injury factor, and that's why a lot of moms and pops say, "Hey, I don't want Johnny playing football." So,
yeah,
but the game of football is a great game, and you can learn some of the ball skills in flag football, the catching, the throwing, the handoffs, a lot of the other skills, which are a big part of it, and you have a lot of fun. And later on down the line, as Josh mentioned 5 minutes ago, then you can make a decision. You want to be a football player, and hopefully,
sure,
a lot of those people will be football players. So,
yep,
flag football is just a great lead into contact football.
Yeah. I'm going to jump right into a really tough question. Do you see many concussions each year? Is it true what they're saying about high school football?
Knock on wood.
I'm knocking too.
Okay. I honestly don't think we've seen more than when I started 45 years ago.
Yep.
But there's a greater awareness today, a much greater awareness.
Yep.
So our trainer, for instance, if there's a looks like a possibility of a concussion, that person goes through a concussion protocol,
sure,
just like you see on TV, basically the same type of thing.
Yep.
And all of our kids take a baseline test at the beginning of the year, so,
yep,
they can check their level now according to the pre-concussion level, things,
yep,
like that. So there are some concussions in the game of football, but no more than there were before. And there's a lot of other sports. When you look at hockey, for instance, soccer, girls' soccer, and there's a lot of other sports that concussions, yep, are involved because there's multiple head traumas. But, I honestly don't think there's any more than there were, back years ago. It's just there's a greater awareness today.
Sure. I remember, and I'm going to talk about myself for a second. I'm going to be more like Billy Goodman than I want to be, but we always got to pick on Billy on this podcast.
I thought he was kicked off for a reason.
He is. He's kicked off. You're right.
So what are you doing?
I'm sorry. I'll be more like John Eisenhart then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who's not here.
He's the Hurricane?
Suspended once again. But anyway, when I was a kid, I played football my whole life, and it was my favorite sport. And our helmets, I bet we had maybe maybe a half an inch of padding inside that helmet. And when I took my helmet off, you could still see the helmet on top of my head because it would be so hard pressed on my head. Nowadays, it's not like that, right? I mean, you have so much technology inside of the helmet that is it less likely that somebody's going
to
get it?
Oh, I think so. I think so. The helmets today are excellent. They basically form fit to the head.
Sure.
There's parts of the helmet that come out that you can take out, basically fit individually to a person.
Sure.
They're changing all the time, technology-wise, and they're much, much better than they were a generation ago or even two generations ago. So the equipment is better. I think the teaching techniques are better.
Yep.
Just about all coaches I know have gone to shoulder tackling instead of leading with the head.
Yep.
We're doing all we can to take the head out of the game. And it's almost impossible when you contact somebody. It's almost impossible to not have a head in there someplace.
Sure.
But just about everybody I know is teaching that not to lead with the head, to lead with the shoulder.
I never got hurt playing football, and then in high school, the coach told me that I was too skinny to play. And I love football. I love hitting people. I love the physicality of the sport. I love the thought process. I was a quarterback and a defensive back. It was always you're always thinking. You're always on. And I went to soccer, and within a year, I had a broken leg and a concussion. Because there was no protection, and you're going full steam at somebody, and you're really blind when the ball's up in the air. You're blind. You go up for a header. And not to mention that the ball's going to hit you in the head, with no helmet on. And, you collide and you smash heads with somebody. It's a pretty physical game. And maybe as much as football when it comes to that high-speed contact.
Sure. There's a lot of concussions, unfortunately, which come in different sports. But they're not on Sunday afternoon like the NFL. The NFL is on every Sunday noon, every afternoon for the whole fall, basically.
Yep.
And people see the concussions coming at that level. So they transfer that. Well, it must be happening in the high school level.
Yep.
It must be happening at the college level and things like that. Yep. And so
it is most definitely a hot topic. And I think that's why I like the fact that Josh and Moni and a bunch of the people on the board are getting the kids to realize how much goes into the game of football right now, because nobody realizes how much planning that a head coach does. Nobody can really recognize it until they've seen a head coach or had a friend that was a head coach, and they're gone for 8 hours, just disappearing for the enormous salary of about $2,000. They're going to spend their entire Sunday, Monday watching film, breaking down film, putting together scouting reports, and there's 11 guys on the field with 11 different responsibilities on any given play, and they all have to move together. Nobody can really truly understand the game within the game.
Football is a unique game for multiple reasons.
Yep.
And one reason is it takes 11 cogs to come together to make a play work.
Yep.
Also, each position has its own individuality about it. An offensive lineman is definitely different than a quarterback.
Yep.
A linebacker is definitely different than a free safety. And those positions, you have to learn that position. In a lot of positions, people get no credit at all. An offensive lineman is an unappreciated person, but he's the most important person in the offense.
Yep.
And there's so many things about the game of football that have carryover value to life skills, basically. And that's the great thing about the game of football. And to me, it is the purest of all the team games.
Yeah.
And what a young man or young woman can glean from football, they can take for life. And that's why people like myself who believe in the game, who've coached for a long time, that's why we stay in it, because we believe in the value the game has.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys play? Moni, did you play football when you were younger?
I did. I played freshman year, and then I went to soccer for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I went back to football my senior year.
Yeah, what position did you play?
So, I was fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I played for Coach Bailey.
Yeah.
Mike Bailey.
Yeah.
And so when he realized I wasn't playing soccer anymore, he came after me. And but I didn't grow up playing football.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things you got to learn at a young age.
Sure.
The system.
Yep.
And, anybody can catch a football, but then all of a sudden you can put shoulder pads on and helmets.
It's totally different.
It becomes a completely different,
sure,
process. And so I was really fast, but I had a really hard time catching the football.
Yeah. Now, like Coach talks about, because the reason why I coach is the same thing, Coach. If we win, great. But if I walk out and a kid is coming back to me 10 years later and realizing the value of what he learned inside that team environment, that's the good stuff, right? That's the stuff that makes you keep coming back for more. But how much of that stuff, playing sports and specifically football or even soccer, because soccer on a maybe less of a contact level, is the same idea as football. How much of those skills and how much of those things that you learn from your coaches and your players and your teammates and being part of a team, how much of that you've taken forward into your grown-up life?
I think it's every day. It's everyday life. Yeah. You know, I was not a. That might be a question for Mr. Wolfgram here, because I was more of a track guy.
Yeah.
And so track is really more of an individual sport.
Yeah.
So I played football just because, you know, I didn't have anything going on in the fall.
Yeah.
But, you know, track wise, it's different. It's a different mentality. You know, you lose because that's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, you win because you work hard.
Yeah.
You can't blame anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but football, coaching the girls team, one of the things I stress with the girls is that you got to do your job. You know, it's funny, but it's true. It's like everybody, all five of you, has a you have a responsibility in this play, and you have to do that. And when they don't do it, they see it.
Yep.
They instantly see like how it just got broken up.
Yep.
But then when we do it again and they do it right, they realize, wow, you're right, coach.
Yeah. Think about how many skills are just in that one statement right there. How many things have you, like, it goes with everything. Like, I worked construction for a lot of years, and there's a whole bunch of, it's the same thing. If a guy doesn't do his job, the whole thing stops and shuts down, and then it all of a sudden becomes a money loss, right?
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
So, Josh, you played center at SOPO, right? Am I right?
Actually, I started my football career playing flag football in South Portland.
Did you flag football way back in the 60s?
It was early 70s. Just so
okay, all right, sorry.
We had flag football. Actually, we moved to South Portland when I was in second grade, and then I think we had started a flag football program there right around the same time, right around third graders. We played flag football for a little bit.
John, did you start that? Did you start the program?
No, Jack Flynn had already started it.
Yeah, right on.
Jack was the coach then. He had started a great program back then already.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of cool.
So I started then. I played flag football, and then I started playing in around fifth grade. I played tackle, but then I did play for South Portland for my dad.
Yeah, that's cool. How was it playing for your dad?
It was great. It was great. It was there was a very good relationship there. I asked him early on when I was a sophomore, because I was a freshman, I didn't really play for him, but when I was a sophomore, I did, and I said, should I call you dad or coach? And he said, just call me dad. That's what it is. Which actually made it really easy. If I asked a question in practice, he'd know where to look.
Yeah.
I was the only one who asked him, said, hey, dad, and answered the question. So, you know, I got yelled at just as much as anybody else did if we ever have anything wrong, which actually yelling didn't happen all that often, but I got held accountable just as much as everybody else. And playing for him was good, and I was fortunate enough to be on a very good team, and we had a good group of kids, and we had a lot of good times for the 3 years I played.
How was it when you got home from a game? When did it shut off?
We talked at home. We talked at home a lot. We had a couple kind of unique things that we did together. We used to go out every Thursday night before the Friday night game. We used to go out to eat together, basically. And a lot of his friends used to come home, and they'd be playing cards at the table. There'd be like eight of them playing cards at the table when I came home. And, we had a lot of unique things that we did together that were part of the experience. You know, Josh played for us in the mid-90s, and my other son, Brett, played for us in the early 90s. And we had a great relationship also. And I thought and my daughter was a cheerleader for us back when I was in Gardner.
Perfect.
So it was perfect. And
you made it easier on your wife.
It was great. Yeah, it was, and my wife was a part of the whole thing all the way through.
That's really cool.
So, there was no problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was funny. Because I mentioned hay in the barn, because that's actually my dad used to say to us on Thursday nights, because we'd go out. Actually, we used to go to Pizza Hut most Thursdays when I was growing up. We'd go to Pizza Hut because we could go out that night because he didn't have any football work to do. Because Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday were all football nights. He had to prepare for the next practice. Well, he didn't have to prepare for a practice very much on Friday because Friday nights were games.
Yeah, sure.
That's the hay in the barn night. So that's the Thursday nights.
Yeah, he was still thinking about it, though. He was still thinking about that game.
He was thinking about it all
the
time.
He just wasn't writing anything down.
Yeah,
but
we watched the games. Yeah. We'd come home from a Friday night game, and we'd all just put the game on and watch the game.
Yeah.
And he started watching film. Inadvertently started watching film on Friday night just to, see the games, stuff like that. We all wanted to watch it together. This is what it was like.
You must have the most patient and understanding wife of all time.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Yeah. She is.
I really like what you said at your main Hall of Fame speech. I was telling you about that before the podcast. The first person that you said was your best assistant coach was your wife, and I thought that was a really cool way of saying that she's been by you and stuck by you, understood, and not just understood, but made herself a part of it. That's pretty cool.
A very smart man told me back when I graduated from graduate degree from college and started coaching. He told me that the most important thing in your coaching career is your wife. A wife is supportive and understanding. This was back in 1971, and he was absolutely right.
Yeah. My wife always used to call herself a baseball widow. Every baseball season for a lot of years, she'd say, I'm widowed. But, you know, she'd be there.
My parents have been married for 51 years now. My mom actually considers it to be about a quarter less than that, only three quarters of it, because she doesn't really consider them being married during the football season. So she's gonna scale it back a little bit.
Hutch, you get the same thing with Jenny? Is she?
Pretty much, yeah. It's during the winter, we work as a team, but we each do our own job. The life of a coach who's married, it's a whole different thing.
I always say that Hutch's wife is happiest after a Saturday try meet because he has no voice.
Yes, the quieter I am, the happier she is. So. Tournaments are the best because it's about 12 hours of yelling and then it's all over.
So, Coach, do you mind if I dig back a little bit on your history?
According to what it is, go ahead.
Okay. So I'll keep it innocent here, or we could have to mark this explicit. But you grew up in Massachusetts, am I right?
I did. Marblehead, yep.
Yeah, and you do grow up playing sports, or is your family
did.
Sports?
I loved sports from the very beginning. You know, played Little League Baseball. There was no Pop Warner football back at that time, so I didn't play that. But I was involved in sports for a very young time.
Yeah. What sports did you play when you were growing up?
Baseball and football mostly.
Yeah. No basketball?
No basketball. Yeah. I had a vertical jump of approximately 3 inches.
Yeah, perfect.
Which you passed on to me.
I told my both of my sons they would never touch the rim on a basketball hoop. My oldest son, Brett, the day he touched the rim, I think he's like 17 years old, he called me up and said right away, he said, Dad, I touched the rim today.
You're wrong. So you played, obviously, football was probably the love, right? And then moving through Marblehead, did you stay in Marblehead your whole life? Did you go to Marblehead High School?
Marblehead High School, graduated from there in 1966, went to the University of Maine.
Yep.
Developed a very good relationship with Walt Abbott, the head coach of the University of Maine back at that time. Yep. And because of him, I went up there to play and had a very good experience up there and met some great people, Bob Pickett, who went to the University of Massachusetts, Jack Butterfield, who went to the New York Yankees, and some coaches who were really great mentors to me. So my experience, I don't think you could have had a better experience in terms of preparing for coaching than I had at Maine.
How much of those guys, I mean, you obviously, did you get recruited out of high school to go to Maine, or did you walk on?
No, I walked on. Maine had no scholarships back at that time.
Yeah.
Back in the 1960s, they were the only Yankee Conference team that wasn't scholarshiped.
Really?
UMass, back at that time, it was Connecticut, UMass, URI, UNH, and Vermont played. That was the Yankee Conference.
Oh, my God.
And everybody else had scholarships except for we.
How did Walt do it? I mean, how did he? I mean, he was pretty successful,
yes,
right?
He was.
Without scholarships.
Yep.
I mean, did he get a lot of Maine kids? Is that what? Is
a
that
lot
what
of Maine kids. Yeah. A lot of Maine kids. Yeah. And a lot of kids. We had a huge team. Our freshman team in 1966 was like 110 kids.
Oh, my God.
The freshman team. And when we graduated 4 years later, we still had 30 of those kids as seniors. So we had really good numbers. Not a lot of great athletes, but really good numbers. And we kind of won by attrition. And,
just wore them down. You can put a whole new 11 guys on the field every time.
It's kind of interesting. The offensive line, my junior year there, I actually played center. The right tackle, who was from Westbrook, now is from Westbrook, originally from Brunswick, his name is Dennis Walsh.
Dennis, we worked with him.
Yeah, he was the right tackle at 190 pounds. Yeah. Jay Vance, who now lives in South Portland, Jay was the right guard at 195 pounds. I was the center at 200 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the right side of the line, and the left side was a little bit bigger. But we played at a Division I AA level back at that time in the 1960s.
My God, smash-mouth football at its best. But so how did you guys do while you were in college? Did you guys have a pretty successful run?
Well, our senior year, we did very well. Yeah. Our sophomore year, not so well. We didn't win a tilt in the sophomore year. And we had a tough schedule, though. We played BC. We played the Citadel. We played Bucknell. We played some really tough teams.
Jeez.
And we won zip and eight. The next year, we were 3-5.
Yeah.
And finally, my senior year, we were 5-3-1. So we had a winning record.
Do you think Coach Abbott did that on purpose? Do you think he made you lose in your sophomore year on purpose?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Was it just a draw? And he just, yeah.
Just Coach Abbott is an outstanding competitor.
Yeah.
And I don't know of anybody that hated to lose any more than him. And, but we just didn't have the personnel.
Yeah. And so you played through college. Did you ever get hurt?
Yes, I hurt my knee. Yep. I hurt my knee. I actually hurt my knee in high school.
Yeah.
And didn't get it operated on. Then a reoccurrence in my sophomore year in college, so I had to get operated on that. Then,
okay.
So I missed a spring practice my sophomore year. So that was the injury.
Just one practice, or was it?
No, I missed the spring practice.
Just checking.
So you play for Coach Abbott.
Yeah.
Is he your biggest influence? Is he the reason why you get into coaching?
Yeah, I would say either him or Jack Butterfield, the baseball coach.
How did Jack influence you? Was he coaching football with his baseball duties?
He did coach football.
He did?
But he also scouted, and I scouted with him my first year in grad school.
Yeah.
When I was a graduate assistant.
Yeah.
We traveled all over New England, and I got to talk with him all the
cool
time.
How cool
is
that?
It was really cool. And He's the best teacher as a coach that I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
You know, I learned so much from him about teaching, about analyzing, about organizing, and things like that. And he definitely helped me a lot. Bob Pickett helped me a lot.
Yeah.
There are other guys too. So,
So a lot of the way you coach now, and do you find yourself saying some of the same terms and some of the same phrases? And you
definitely.
Do you?
And this is 48 years later.
You know what? If it ain't broke.
Yeah, no, right? I absolutely agree. And, I've never been accused of being a sophisticated coach at all, but I haven't.
This guy that I used to work with a long time ago said the best teachers and coaches are the best thieves. Because you just steal what you the best coach. You expose yourself to as many coaches as you can and don't put them down because they're doing something that you're not doing that's working.
There aren't a lot of original ideas out there. Most of the ideas are borrowed. You just pass them on and accumulate them and use what you want them.
So what did you major in at Maine?
I majored in history. I actually had a health major. I had a triple major, health, history, and English.
Yeah.
And I started teaching history when I got out in 1971.
Yeah.
And did that at two schools, at Madison and Gardner.
Yeah.
And then when we moved to South Portland in 86, I started teaching English.
Yeah.
So
were you born in, Josh, were you born in Gardner?
I was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Right on. So you you start coaching 71 in Gardner, and I heard your speech, and you said that when you pulled into Madison, your wife said, "We're not moving here." Right?
She wasn't too impressed with Madison. When the biggest building in Madison is a looming paper mill, we came from Marblehead, Massachusetts, which is a lot different than Madison, Maine, and she wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories is you telling a story about you and a coach had to reseed the field. Was that at Gardner?
No, that was at Madison.
That was at Madison.
My wife and I. That's where, because the football field, they played softball on the football field in the summertime. So they were the bases areas were worn out. So we had to reseed the field.
I mean, that's commit. How old are you at that point?
At that time, 20. They started at 22, 23, 24.
Yeah. Yeah. No kids yet.
Yes. So we had one. Yeah,
who's the oldest, Josh?
My daughter.
The daughter is
Beth.
Yeah, I have a sister, Beth, who is 10 years older than I am. My brother Brett's 5 years older than I am, and me.
Yeah. Spread it out. That's good stuff.
We did.
That's way to do it.
Smart plan.
So the older kids, they're old enough to help out.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Take care across the cut in half. Yeah, that's good. So you were teaching at all those schools that you were coaching
as
well.
Yeah.
And you've coached, how many sports do you think you've coached?
I've coached a bunch of sports. I've coached baseball for a long time. Then I coached girls softball for a few years.
Yeah.
I coached track. I've officiated in baseball, basketball for a long time, lacrosse for a long time. So I've been involved in multiple sports.
Yeah. So. What was your first state championship?
Can't remember.
That's such a good answer. That is such a good answer. Now I hope that when I'm done with my coaching career that I can't remember the state championships. Because when you win as many as coach, these 110, I know you're not going to say this on the podcast, but I'm going to say it for you, but... I read your record was something like 309 and 92 and 10 state championships over your career, and you don't remember. What do you remember most about your coaching?
I remember a lot of good kids that I still see to this day. I see kids from Madison, you know, when We're back there in the early 70s. I see kids from, not kids, I see adults from Gardner now. Yeah. We were in Gardner from 75 to 86. And, of course, I see kids from South Portland. We were there for 20 years. And and then, of course, Cheveris has been, county being assistant, has been, I think, 13 or 14 years. I see a lot of Cheverians, too. So that's the best part, absolutely the best part.
Yeah.
It's about, think about football, the relationships you develop in any sport as a coach and a player, they're a great relationship developed. But in football, you have to put so much into the game. You play one game a week, and you prepare six other days for that one game. So you develop very unique relationships with kids, basically. And and you get to see those kids off the field later on, and hopefully you played a small part in their lives.
You talked about in your speech, you talked about that Walt Abbott taught you a lot about in-season player relationships. Can you talk a little bit about that and your strategy on how to get maybe kids that are that you know are good, that could be really good, but they're maybe under-motivated or, you know?
You know, it's all about the kids, basically. It's not really X's and O's. Yeah. You know, it's not really strategy. It's kids and how you basically work with the kids, how you deal with the kids. And, you know, I think that you have to respect every kid that plays for you and see what that young man has for abilities. And you have to see if you can develop and embellish those abilities to the utmost, you know, potential and fit those abilities into a big, I call it a mosaic.
Yeah.
Putting together a team is like a mosaic. You're trying to get each piece to develop to its fullest and put it together so you have a mosaic. And so I think the first thing you do is that you respect everybody that plays for you and understand that everybody wants to be successful in some way. For some reason, maybe they're having problems or issues and they're not doing well, but everybody wants to be successful in some way. And you have to find a spark that lights that success.
Yeah. A friend of mine that I teach with now is Dan LaGage, who teaches at Deering with me, has had some success coaching basketball. And his theory is the same as yours. Like, he would go into the projects at, you know, in Sagamore and Riverton. He'd go in and shake hands with the kids and say, what do you need? What can I help you with? And that I think, propelled him to a couple of state championships alone, because those kids believed that he was in their corner. And they would, and those waning moments where the kids could go either way. They could go with you or they could go against you. They could go with each other, against each other. They always went with him. And I think a lot of that, it sounds like you did a little bit of that same stuff.
Yeah, I think a good program attracts kids. If you're successful and you treat kids well, I think they're going to come within the program, which is very important. I think that's a key to longevity over a long period of time. Just treat kids well and have a modicum of success, basically, and attract more kids to the program.
Yeah. Now, you coach at Cheveris and you guys won a state championship in 10, right? Oh, 2010, I think. I know you don't remember.
I can't remember.
I love this. I love them. So I'll tell you that you won a state championship in 2010, but that Cheveris is a whole different animal, because in South Portland you can develop talent, right? You have a flag football program. You know the kids. You know the families. They hopefully will stay in the program. But at Cheveris, they're coming from all over the place. How do you win in a program like Cheveris?
Again, I think you want to establish a good program and attract kids. And we've had, since I've been there, we've had some great kids. We had a kid go to Ohio State, walk on Ohio State, Peter Gwillem. Right now we've got a scholarship young man at UConn, Zordon Holman, basically. So a scholarship, full scholarship. We've got the tailback at the University of Maine, Joe Fitzpatrick. You know, we've had all kinds of great kids who've come because they wanted to go to a Jesuit school, but also they want to be a part of a quality program. And so you just try to establish a quality program and get those kids to come.
It doesn't hurt when you have a guy like John Wolfgram on the staff. I mean, how many kids do you think come there because they know that there's a guy there like you? And I know you. That I don't want you to brag about it, but you've established yourself as a Hall of Fame coach. How many kids do you think are coming there because John Wolfgram is there?
I don't know, but I know they had success at Cheveris before I went there. So there's a lot of good coaches around.
That's great. And now the head coach. You guys work really well together.
Yeah. We do. Mike Vance has coached with me for a long time. He played for us back in South Portland back in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And later on coached with us at South Portland. And the whole time I've been at Cheveris from 2006, he's been there also. So, a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, I just thought I was very tired and I want to step back a little bit. I didn't want to do the 7 days a week, 12 months a year bit. So I stepped back and,
you went to 6 days a week.
So. The hay was in the barn two days. And, 2 days a week.
Mike's doing a great job. Yeah. I'm just helping him out.
Yeah. So now Moni talked about Mike Bailey. Some of the coaches that you coached against while you were at South Portland and Cheverus. Can you give me some of the names that you admire?
Mike's an excellent coach. He's had a lot of success at Portland. He's won Mike Landry, another coached against him from Biddeford. Today, some of the coaches today, Lance Johnson does a great job at Scarborough.
Yep.
Kevin Cooper does a great job at Bourne Eagle.
Yep.
Kevin Kiesel does a great job at Thorne Academy. Some of the coaches in the East do really good jobs too. And there's a lot of good coaching in the state of Maine. I think that's one thing that we do very well in the state of Maine. We coach our kids very well.
Yeah. How the hell does Bonnie Eagle keep winning? How are they always a powerhouse out there and in no other sport? It's like the Skowhegan field hockey team. They're just nonstop. How do they keep winning? How are they that big and that strong and that talented?
I think I explained that about 5 minutes ago. If you establish a quality program and treat kids well, kids are going to be attracted to that program.
Yeah.
And then, I can remember when they started football back probably 30 years ago. They started from scratch.
Yeah.
And one thing about Bourne Eagle, they still pay for their program themselves. They raise private funding for their program, which is absolutely unbelievable to me.
Yeah, unheard of, yeah.
To have a program with that many kids, that much success, and raise the money privately is, I have no idea how Kevin does it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I think what Josh is doing here in Portland, I think that's like you were talking about having a flag program to rebuild. That's a long, arduous process because you're talking about starting kids at K-1 and you're going to have, the next year maybe you get a few kids into 2-3 that will keep going, and then it's 10 years in the making, right? And who's going to reap the benefits of that? Who takes that? Do they go to Cheverus? Do they go to Portland? Do they go to Deering? Hopefully the idea is that you've built all three of those schools to take all three of them. How does that change the, let's project, how many years has flag football been in?
Right now we're at 5 years.
5 years, yeah. So project that 4 years from now, right? Yeah. And then when those kids are freshmen, those first kids are freshmen, what's that going to look like? Right now Deering is struggling to get guys to even show up to practice. And Portland's got a few kids that are left in the program that are keeping them alive. What happens in between then? I don't think Cheverus is having the similar issue. How many kids showed up for football this year?
Mid-30s.
Mid-30s?
Yeah. Some of that is our enrollment. Our enrollment isn't as high as it was.
Yeah, that's true.
Like 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, enrollment is an issue and numbers are an issue. There's no question. Yeah.
I mean, my hope really is that we're extending the time for parents to be able to make that decision about kids playing tackle. So that a little more data can come out about tackle. And being like, all right, we've got a lot of negative data. It's come out and said there's some negativity about it, there's some caution about tackle football. Well, let's wait a few years and let's see a little bit more data and say, it's not that bad, and get some other kids to start playing again.
Yep.
And so I'm kind of hoping that we're kind of bridging a gap a little bit right here, and then hopefully that these kids, by the time they start getting into middle school, the middle school program beats up. As soon as the middle school program moves up, then you got more kids going to high schools, kids going to high schools. That's when you're really going to get them. So.
Yep.
And I think is part of that with the change in trying to kind of get families to understand the realities behind the sport. Coach, I know you mentioned earlier the shift to shoulder tackling. And that's something that gets talked about on the NFL level. I mean, you hear that pretty much every game, every commentator is bringing that up. Is that something that's being taught at the younger tackle levels to sort of help promote that safety and that it's a sport they can still learn a lot from but be safe with at the same time?
I mean, I'll jump in and just say from a youth football level, that's definitely something that's being taught, because we're really following the model that my dad spoke about earlier about keeping the head out of it. And USA Football is really doing a good job of educating youth tackle coaches on that and basically giving a platform for them to learn the best ways to teach their kids. And actually, one thing that is nice about flag football is that you are able to get more kids to be involved in a program that doesn't involve contact, so that when they get down the road, they probably have a person who's more qualified to teach them how to tackle and block than they would, say, at a younger level. And, and that's no slight on anybody else, but generally speaking, the you know, a coach at a very young level, those guys might not have as much training as a coach at an older level, and to know the proper tackling and things of that nature. Actually, I always remarked to some people that my dad always said that some of the best linemen he ever had were the guys who never played before, and he could teach him how to block from the, you know, just immediately. Like, you know, when they didn't have to break any bad habits, you could just teach him how to block. Yeah. So sometimes you can get through that with flag. So
that's what Josh mentions is a very interesting thing. The football skills are kind of what I would call a low refined skills. Some sports have very refined skills. Sure. Like for instance, lacrosse. Yeah. Lacrosse, the ability to catch, cradle, throw, do things like that with a stick. It's a very refined type of skill. Yeah. And it takes a lot of work to do that. Football doesn't have it. Football, blocking and tackling are not refined.
Right.
You know, and catching a ball is not refined. So, and you can learn those things. We've been fortunate enough to have a lot of kids come out in high school for the first time and be very, very good players.
Yep.
In fact, one of our better Chevers teams 5 years ago had, I think, 6 kids come out and play as starters who had never played football before.
Yeah.
And it's just because of the nature of the game.
I look at a guy like the Patriots' Chris Hogan.
Sure.
He was a lacrosse player, right? And he was just a fast runner.
Yep.
I mean, even Moni, you talked about you were a fast runner. Mike Bailey came and found you because he knew you were probably one of the faster guys in
Yeah, but he never took the time to teach him how to catch.
Right. There is that, which is maybe one of the more refined things that you're talking about. Catching a ball is, especially if you get a guy that can sling it a little bit. It's not an easy thing to do to catch that oval coming at you. But
the University of Maine has actually had a couple players who played for them, went on to the pros, who didn't play high school football.
And really?
They were. One was a tight end. I can't remember their names right now, but I think there are 2 of them. Yeah. Jack Cosgrove would know. But they didn't play high school football, and they went to Maine, graduated from Maine, and went on the pros.
Yeah. Now, you coached in college for a couple of years, right?
Yeah. I was at Bowdoin for 5 years as an assistant. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you do? What were you? What was your job?
I was the special teams coordinator.
Yeah. Why'd you move on to college? You just wanted
something different.
Yeah.
You know, something different.
It was
at that time I had been at it for, I think, 35 years or something.
Yeah.
So just had an opportunity to change.
Yeah, that's cool. So now you're at Chevers. Let's put you in a hypothetical. Portland High School's coaches all resign. South Portland's they resign and they come to you and say, "Coach, we need you. Would you ever do it again?"
Well, as a fellow Deering coach, he's already in purple, so it'd be an easy switch, right?
I'm an assistant coach right now. I enjoy coaching, and you know, it's at my particular stage in the career I've had, it's. Right now, I'm in the right spot. Let's put it that way.
You know, I love being an assistant coach because you are just that. You coach the kids, and that's your job. You're shielded. You just coach, and it's a blast. When you get into that head coaching thing, is just a whole nother level of little things. Like Josh tonight had a couple of kids come up to him. He's running the league, but he's coaching like 7 teams, and he's, you know, he's got player managers, he's got shorts, and he's got, you know, all this other crap that he's. But he's also a coach, by the way. You know, but he had kids coming up there with, you know, handing him fistfuls of money, and he's like, "Oh, great!" And he's got his, you know, pocket, and he's coaching his team. You know, that's the happiest
time I have is 3 weeks into the season when I don't have to look at 130 kids. I get to look at 10 kids and be able to coach them.
Yeah.
So I love what I do, but I truly enjoy when I can just look at 10 kids and say, "Oh, we're going to run a play, and I'm going to tell you how we're going to do it." And so, but yes.
And how cool is it going to be in that 4 years when you see that first group of kids going through that you've helped develop, and you're reading their name in the paper, and they're having some success, and they're feeling, you know, how
I'm
good
looking forward to it. I am. I see a lot of kids that I coached when they were kindergarten or first graders, and they're in tackle now.
Yeah.
Looking at the rosters, and I look at a lot of kids who've been playing for me and along the way, and it's great. And I'm really looking forward to seeing when these guys get to high school and you know, and seeing those kids that I coached and they know me as coach, and then so when they go to high school, you know, possibly watching some of their games and just seeing them start off. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Coach, if you could pick one moment in your storied career that you remember the most, or maybe 2 moments, what could you pick off?
I won 2 state championships with him.
Did you really? Is that what it is?
That's a good
smile on his face.
I would say,
listen, you sound like Billy Goodman right now, all right?
One of the best things was to get the opportunity to coach my sons. Yeah. That was great. Yep. It was a great opportunity.
That's cool.
Yep.
Did your daughter play flag?
My daughter did not play flag. She was a cheerleader and a field hockey player. Yep. And I can remember playing in her father-daughter field hockey games.
Oh, my God.
And checking and playing physical game with all her friends. And she didn't speak to me for about a month.
Well,
and then possibly her one of her seminal moments in high school was we had a huge rally for the Coney Garden game in the gym. She dressed up. She somehow got a hold of my coaching stuff.
Oh, geez.
And she wore it. And she went out in the middle of the rally,
oh,
and she did a better impression of me than me.
It was in front of the whole student body.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
The whole student body. It was absolutely
that.
Spectacular.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough, Coach, for coming in here and doing this, because I've heard your name, and everybody knows who you are. And that if they're any sports fans at all, or they just they even if they just read the newspaper, they know there's, you know, I talked to a couple of people before we did this. I knew that you were coming in because Pat Reagan had said that he had communicated with you, and I was like, what do you know about this guy? And every one of them said he's a class act. Every one of them. And I think that speaks volume, especially when I hear from people that I respect. And you know, I having listened to you and your answer about how many state championships, and I don't know, none of it, that doesn't matter. That's for the kids. Is my favorite answer of yours, and I really appreciate that about you. I have one more question for you.
Sure.
We do walk-up songs.
What's that?
We do walk-up songs. So like in baseball, we do a walk-up song. So when I introduce you through the podcast,
yeah,
what's your
what
anthem?
Song do you want to? What song do you want to be playing for?
I don't know what you mean by walk-up song.
So you know how baseball players, when they walk up, they have a song that plays as they walk up to the plate.
Oh, I gotcha.
So you can pick any song you want, any genre, and I will play. This usually tells a lot about a person, just so you know.
I mean, I know the answer to it because you told me we went to a Red Sox game, but I'll be interested to see
what you're saying. What were you going to say?
Sweet Caroline.
No, you want Let It Be.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, okay. That I don't know if that's good enough. Let It Be.
It's whatever you want.
Okay, all right.
Let It Be.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Coach,
sure.
for coming in. And if you have anything to say to your son that's going to be recorded or anything embarrassing at all, now's the time to air it out.
No, I'm all set. I'm very proud of him, you know, on a number of levels. At that, in the football level, I know that he had a very good experience in the game of football. So he's trying to give other kids that same experience that he was able to have. And I like his values. I like the way he does things. And, you know, he's giving kids the chance to play a great game and later on make the decision whether they want to stay with it when it becomes a contact situation. So.
He's doing an unbelievable job. Like, there's last year at the at the end of the season, his team just destroyed my team, and I was like, hey, I'm picking the teams next year. He goes, you can have it. But he does such a good job. You know, that value system that you and your wife have placed in him is showing up, and that kids are going to pick up on that, and it's going to make our city a better city. So thank you for creating him so that we could be here tonight, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Coach. So did you know how good a coach your dad was when you were little?
Yeah, I had a pretty good idea of it.
You did? Did people tell you?
Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, it was in Gardner, he was revered quite a bit. He was definitely a very popular man in Gardner. It was a smaller town, small community, football meant quite a bit. And I was even 6 or 7 years old, you still kind of knew what it was like. I mean, you kind of knew that it was important. But then we went to South Portland. There was a little bit of a buzz about it. And, you know, as I kind of grew up, I kind of understood a little bit more about it. So, yeah.
He comes across as a very humble, quiet guy. Is he like that at home?
He is. Yeah. Actually, he is. He's pretty quiet at home. He's not. He doesn't say a lot, or he doesn't like get riled up very much. He's a pretty like even keel kind of guy. I guess the best way to put it.
So was your mom the heavy hand in the house? Did you fear your mom?
I did. Yes. I feared my mom quite a bit. Actually, my mom was definitely the one who held us to task on a lot of things. And so yeah, it was.
Yeah, I wasn't lying when I said I asked a bunch of people. I was like, what do you think of this guy? And every one of them straight across the board was like, that's a class act, unbelievable coach. Couldn't find a single stitch of dirt to throw at him and say, hey, what do you think about this? Nothing. He's just a well-respected guy.
Yeah, he was
straight across the state.
The interesting thing about it is, I mean, like when playing for him was interesting because, I mean, I knew, obviously, the kids that were on each end of the spectrum as far as the good kids, bad kids, whatever it is. And he had a very similar tact with all of us. And he handles all fairly similar. You know, the harder kids, the kids that were a little rougher on the edges, he just gets dumb on them a little bit more.
Yeah.
But he still treated them with a lot of respect, and that's what he said. Him treating the kids with respect was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Because the kids would respond to it.
Yeah.
And so it was it was interesting stuff.
Building human beings.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
It's a good guy. It's too bad that you know, the apple fell far away from the tree, you know. But
it did. I mean, I rolled furthest away. My sister's.
She's probably the
close.
Good one, right?
She is. She's the good apple. She's, good one. Yeah. she's definitely the golden delicious.
Who was the best athlete out of the three of you?
My brother's probably the best athlete out of all of us. Yep. So he was. He's actually smaller than I was, but he played center.
Yeah.
Just like I did, and my dad played center as well. Actually, my grandfather did as well. And but he
you,
played,
did your grandfather play at Maine too?
He didn't. No. He just played Marblehead.
He did. Okay.
My dad did. So, but yeah, my brother was probably the best athlete out of all of us.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool household to grow up in. But.
It was pretty cool, actually. One thing I was thinking about when my dad was talking about it a little bit is that one thing that was neat when we were growing up is that we would, if my dad won a good game, we would get to ride back on the bus with him.
That's pretty cool.
And so we would. You know, if you won a game and I was 8 or 9 years old, I would get to go on the bus.
Yeah.
Obviously, you ride back on wins. And how many losses I rode back on.
Yeah.
But that was fun because you sat in the front seat and you got to, like, hang out with them. Yeah. And when my kids were born, my brother has a boy and a girl who are around the same age as my oldest son.
Yep.
And when my dad was coaching at Chevrolet, he actually let them ride back on the bus with him.
When they
beat, like, South Portland, they rode back from South Portland to Chevrolet.
So cool.
And my son Calvin still talks about it. He loves the fact that it was.
Yeah.
So it was so that was always a neat thing to be, you know, on the bus and ride along. And, you know, I talk about that with a lot of people, not just that type of stuff, but also going to, you know, Friday nights for me were going to a game. I mean, we go there and you get a game, you go to the football game, you'd like get a bunch of your friends, you throw the football around. I mean, that's what a Friday night.
How much did the show Friday Night Lights resonate with you?
You know what's funny is that's not what football was like for me. That type of mentality, that type of all or nothing, do or die mentality was not like what football was like for me growing up. It was an interesting thing. I mean, like the movie or the show, it wasn't like that. I mean, we lived football because we liked playing football, but it wasn't like the all end all be all. But we. You know, we didn't feel like we had to do it or had to perform or had to do anything else. We just loved to do it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fear-based type of thing. It was a love-based type of thing.
Yeah.
It was the best way to put it.
It's a way of life. It was really
It was. And actually, it's funny. My dad was talking about, you know, we would do two-a-days in preseason, and all of us would play poker and hang out because we couldn't do anything else.
Right.
Because we'd practice. We'd go to somebody's house. We'd play cards. And we'd play cards until the next practice. And after that practice, we go play cards and we go back home again because we couldn't, we couldn't go out and do anything else. Because we never wanted to go out and do anything like drinking or something like that. So
You always wonder when your kids are younger. Like the boys love baseball. I've always been a baseball coach. Their whole life, that's all they've known. Their first experience with baseball was at Hadlock because all of our home games were at Hadlock. So they were really let down when we played our summer games at Deering High School, but. But they, you know, they've been swinging a bat since they were in diapers, literally on diapers. And you know, one of their favorite stories is we had Ryan Flaherty came back and was talking to the summer kids, my summer baseball team, who was at that time we were wicked young because we were rebuilding the program. And one of my sons, I think it was John, was took a poop on the pitcher's mound while Ryan was talking. All the players were like looking around. He remembered it like he was 3 years old, but he remembered doing that. That's his one of his first memories was taking a crap during high school pitcher's mound, which a lot of my pitchers actually did that same year. But
so his Cy Young acceptance speech will be
right. Yeah,
I once my took pitching career when it's when I took
my
it
first memory of baseball was yeah. So but you know now they love it's their favorite sport. They just love playing baseball because it's just you know we watch Red Sox games and. When I can get Aiden to sit down and watch the game. But that's it's just a way of life, right? Yeah. I mean, you're what you're passionate about, what you've always known,
right?
And you know, it's cool, and it's a nice compliment to your dad to have you guys just love football, and now here you are restarting. Really, you're restarting football in the city of Portland because it is lacking right now. It is down.
It's at the
end of an era right now, but it's like almost, it feels like there's going to be this massive gap of about 4 or 5 years, and then there's going to be this resurgence of kids maybe playing again.
I mean, I really truly hope that a lot of the work that we're doing in flag football is going to pay dividends down the road as far as kids playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year we had one kid who never played football before until last year he played flag football, and then he went to middle school.
Yeah.
And I call him the point of the spear. I'm really hoping that that's the kid who like more kids go in and play. And
and that kid did awesome last week.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. He did a really good job.
Good. It was so.
That's
the funny thing is about it, that's what I've been saying since the start of it. I want more kids to play football, not flag football. I mean, I want kids to play football.
Yep.
Because I think I think like my dad said earlier is that it's one of the most, it's probably the most team based sports there is. And I mean, I was a lineman, and I tell you what, that I have a certain mentality because I was a lineman that you do work that allows other people to shine, and you just grind it out and you work.
Yep.
And you know, my oldest son would probably be a lineman someday because that's what he's going to be like. He's just grinding out. So.
That was everybody I knew growing up played three sports, and when one season ended, you look for your equipment for the other sport, right? You look for your baseball glove, you look for your basketball. You had to inflate your basketball, and you know, but the one thing we always had, especially in Portland, like I grew up in Portland, we had the Riverton gym that saved a lot of lives, but it also kept a lot of kids playing. All kinds of different sports. We played kickball, softball, baseball, everything that they could possibly do to keep us from getting in trouble. And that doesn't necessarily happen anymore. When I go into the rec program at Lyseth, they're playing these other things. You know, it's not basketball, it's not kickball, it's not, you know, touch football. But the one that Mrs. McKenzie, who is the gym teacher at Lyseth, is getting the kids into flag football. She wrote a grant and actually got flags and got uniforms and got footballs and stuff. So she's the kids are teaching her how to play the sport. So so she's a throwback because her brother actually ran the Riverton gym when I was a little kid. So she's kind of a throwback. But we were just talking about how specialization is specialization in a specific sport, such as, and the big ones that I can think of are. Basketball and baseball and softball. But
and really,
volleyball's coming.
It's now becoming a big specialization sport.
It is. It is. You're right. Yep.
My brother
Premier
lives,
League teams. And
my brother lives in Scarborough, and his daughter plays year round, pretty much. I mean, not in the summertime, but she plays three seasons. And so, because actually, and he feels like they need to do it because they have to do it to
to play on the school team by the time they get to high school.
Exactly.
Their coaches are telling them, if you're not playing year round, you're not going to make my team.
Right.
Well, I think that's why football's it's fallen, because it's not a year round sport.
No, and it's not specialization.
It's a seasonal sport. Yeah. And when you're done with football, you're done.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you heard this rumor about the 7-on-7s? Have you heard about this?
That you mean like moving towards it for
moving towards 7-on-7
for both high school or for,
high school?
I've heard about it. Yeah. I mean, I've heard about it, and I know that there's many, many successful programs out there in the United States that do it. In the Midwest,
even Texas,
Nebraska,
has a
Texas,
sizable program.
Like there's guys who go to the NFL who do that and who play that. They don't have the numbers. I think to survive and keep the kids just playing, that's a great idea. But I think it's what youth football should be doing. When I played youth football and tackle, it was 8-on-8.
Right.
And it's there's a lot to be gained about 8-on-8. There's a lot to be gained about having less kids on the field, less responsibilities, kids being able to get directed with what you're going to do, and that's it. So, and being able to, actually, from a coach, we're all coaches here, how much better is it to coach 5 kids versus 11 kids?
It's just so much more manageable. And the kids are getting more individualized instruction, right?
It keeps them more involved. They're staying plugged in. They're not watching a drill that the other part of the team is doing. Everybody's part of every drill.
Right.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that Josh will help push to, instead of 5-on-5, maybe we go to 6 or 7-on-7 flag.
I got no problem with that, Marty. Although the NFL flag tournament that we may be able to start going to on a regular basis is 5-on-5. But 7-on-7, actually, 7-on-7 would actually mean I'd have to have less coaches, which... I mean, actually, that's an underlying problem that we have in general, is that there's this interesting situation we're in right now, that there's a higher growth of kids playing football or playing youth sports, but there are less people who want to actually coach youth sports.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't have a problem getting kids to play flag football. I have a problem with getting parents who want to coach.
Yeah.
And so, 7-on-7 actually might be a good way that I can get away with that.
Yeah.
Well, the parenting, that goes to a whole separate issue. Anyway,
I mean, when we talk about specialization, you're talking about a parenting decision, right? I mean,
but I think you're also talking about then parents with oversized expectations. I mean, to put it lightly, I mean,
and I don't know if that's Hutch. I don't know if that's their problem or if it's they're being sold a bill of goods.
Well,
they believe it.
I think they're being sold a bill of goods, but it's right. They're buying into that bill of goods, and then you have a parent that might otherwise be willing to coach that is turned away from it because they're being pushed away by the parents that aren't bothering to volunteer, and they're not willing to put up with that stress anymore.
It's
too bad.
It's such a fine balance between the people who are, if you're paying a service or paying to have your kid to play a different, playing year round, there's an expectation of that coach who's playing it should actually be of a certain caliber.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not paying for it, then, you really shouldn't have that expectation of that being a certain caliber. Mm-hmm. And then there's this funny thing that, parents think, oh, geez, I can't coach flag football. It's like, do you watch football? Yes. All right. Do you know what a handoff is? Yes. All right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever played backyard football? Yes. Then you're going to be absolutely
fine.
You're absolutely fine. Because I tell you what, anything you're going to do is not going to be anything revolutionary in flag football. All you're going to do is tell 5 kids to go out and do it. What are they doing? And the same thing with lacrosse, basketball, whatever it is. But you start getting that level of parents who, might pay for their kids to do something, and they start getting intimidated by the fact that that guy needs to know exactly what he's talking about, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah. I think that there's more parents that would do it, and I think that there's a big fear of dealing with the other parents at the same time. So you get a lot of horror stories about parents. I mean, I even had a parent on my team in flag football who emailed me and said, I'd really like you to work on more defense and teaching our kids how to pull the flies. I'm like, I didn't respond because I'm like, I'm not responding to that. But
how do you respond to
that? Well, see, what in you do is you reach your arm out. You reach your arm out and you close your fist together and you pull down.
I once had a coach tell me the best way to be a good athlete is to have a dad who was a good athlete. That was my response in my head. Well, were you a good athlete? Did you play a lot of football? And you know, but it's, you know, there are emails that come out, and if you're not a seasoned coach, you're going to take that personally. You know, you're going to say, what do they mean by that? It's like, just go away. You know, just I'm volunteering here. I'm giving the kids a fun environment where they're going to hopefully come back the next year because they had so much fun this year. And if they learn something along the way, awesome. But if they have a great memory and they made two or three new friends, then that's really our goal, right? And then if they come back, then they're going to, you know, innately through the sport, they're going to learn something about it. So even if it's because there's a ton of vocabulary in football, there's a tremendous amount of vocabulary that they're going to learn in any sport, but even if they just learn that and they go watch a football game on TV and they're like, oh, my coach said that, you know, that's how they tie it all together. But I'm not gonna focus my practice on today we're gonna just pull, you know, it's just not that. And I think a lot of parents think it is that, and I think they don't volunteer because they, you know, I have a coach right now who's a track coach. You know, he's been running his whole life, and he's a great writer, and he's like, I'm really not willing to get out on the field. And I'm like, just go out there, make sure that the kids have fun and they pull the flags. That's it. You know, just have fun with it, and everything else we'll take care of. So,
well, I mean, Josh is a different story, right? Your dad was a football coach. He played football. You grew up in football. I didn't.
Yeah.
I played 2 years of football, but I just love coaching. I love coaching the kids. So if parents are listening to this, I don't have...
They're not, because nobody listens to us.
Okay, good. Well, if they are...
147 right here.
Yeah.
Jose, wherever you are.
Football, I don't teach them these football terminologies, not to my girls.
Right.
I show them what to do.
Yeah.
And as I said, you go up and out. You go up and turn around like a candy cane. That's the stuff we say.
Yeah.
And they get it, you know, and it's not rocket science. You know, it's just fun. It's just fundamental football. It's running around. But I think a lot of people get nervous. A lot of parents get nervous because they think that, well, there's a lot of stuff to understand about football. Yes, if you're coaching tackle football, okay. But if you're coaching flag football, there's a quarterback and a center. Right, and then everybody is either receiver or running back.
That's it. The whole thing.
And it really, at the end of the day, is your running back runs one direction, and everyone else runs the other direction.
Yeah.
And that is a play.
That works.
That works all around.
Right.
I have literally said to the kids on my team, Coach, where do I run? Do you see that coach right there?
Yeah.
Run to him.
Yeah. Go to him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You see that kid standing over there in that corner? Hit him.
Do you see that tree?
Not literally hit him, but
go there.
Yeah.
That's backyard football is what it is.
It is.
Josh hit it right on the head. And Josh's dad, John, was like, he was spot on. It's not a refined athlete. Like, we have kids at Deering who are dynamite athletes that don't play football. I'm like, you should play. You can run like the wind. You can jump through the roof. They'll teach you everything else.
Yeah.
Put these pads on, catch this brown thing, and run like hell. I mean, that's really what it comes down to when it, you know, at its simplest form.
But you do have to spend a little time teaching them how to catch a football
right.
with a helmet
you
on.
You are so sensitive. And showed,
so you had a very scarring experience.
I know.
Obviously,
Mike
I
Bailey
did.
Tarnished your
We need to get Mike Bailey on the program.
I know. When did you graduate, by the way?
94.
94. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we didn't play against each other. No. I graduated in 97, so.
We're actually the young ones here.
How are we?
Yeah, I don't know if we have to go there. I don't know.
So Tim's 53. Moni, how old are you?
Shut your face.
42.
Oh, okay. So we're only 40. You know, that's okay.
Yeah. I am still scarred.
Still scarred. I can tell. It's very tough.
This is why the Coach's Corner booth exists, so you can let these things out.
<I know. laughs> We're in the trust trade right now.
It's a safe place.
We're in the trust trade with 47 other people listening.
If you ever talk to a track kid, they will tell you the same thing. They love track just because they know it's them. It's you. You know what I mean? Like, track is a year-round sport.
Yeah.
And so you can't blame anybody. You know, it's either you want to get faster or you don't. You know, it's all on you. And that's one of the things I...
Can you teach kids to get faster?
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
By how much? How much faster? Because I was the slowest kid on any team I was ever on.
It all starts at a certain age where you just start... You teach them the fundamental of running. Yeah. You teach them the
Tim
form.
Just missed that.
I missed the fundamentals.
And I think
I was playing with Legos at that.
Believe me, though, they're when I was coaching high school, it was painful.
Yeah.
You know, because you got these kids who work hard. I'm like, I'm sorry, buddy. You know, you just
it's too
you
late.
Just don't have.
It's too late for you.
I was just gonna put you on.
Maybe that's what Mike Bailey was thinking with you. Sorry, buddy. It's too late for you to learn how to catch.
I know. We never even like spend a day with me,
Boney. That's when you send them to the wrestling team. Like, you're slow, but I think you're an athlete. Just go to the wrestling room. Okay? That's how my career started.
Well, do you ever think about track? Like, it's always the chubby kid that throws a shot put.
That's right. Yeah.
He's not running the 55-yard dash.
Exactly. It just means they're not fast enough to run.
Right.
It's the best chance they have to place.
Yeah.
Their mom's making them participate in something.
Right. So. It's like, you don't make a fat kid run the 40.
Nah.
Yeah.
Right? I was 5'4". My basketball career was doomed. It was all over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like swimming and track are very much, they're the same animal, right? And
they are.
Swimming's maybe a little bit more intense, I think, because everybody's right there. Because
they could also drown.
It's not just that, but it's also harder than blazes.
It is.
In that pool. I mean, both my children have started swimming for the YMCA, and they are on the swim team, and then we go to swim meets. And it is tough.
I would wear a Speedo if I was a parent. I would walk into that place in a Speedo and just say, it's too freaking hot in here for a jacket. Or a T-shirt for that.
But you can't because it's winter and you walk in there with a winter coat. And then all of a sudden you have to sit there with a winter coat next to you. And you're like,
trench coat.
Exactly.
Finn just signed up. I'm dreading this winter.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be hot as
balls. I refuse to have my kids swim.
Yeah.
I refuse.
My brother called it legalized drowning. That's what he called it. Everybody's just trying not to drown. He was a terrible swimmer, but he ended up doing all right, though. He figured it out. He had a really, really good coach, and he ended up really loving it. But he did it because he got cut from the basketball team. So.
Again, see?
Yeah.
Anybody can run track. Anybody can be on the swim team.
Yeah.
Right?
Again, one
you
of
don't
those
have to make the team. Yeah. You can just walk on.
Yeah. Jerry Myatt. Do you know the Myatts at all?
Yes.
So Jerry teaches right next door to me at Deering. And he always talks about his strategy. There's a lot more to the strategy for gaining points because you're always trying to get points no matter who the kid is.
Yep.
And he'll stick kids in. If another kid's sick, he'll stick a shot putter into a relay just because if they just finish, they're going to get enough points to win the meet.
I coached with him 1 year.
You did?
Yeah, he was at Macaulay.
He's one of the finest human beings I've ever worked with.
He's a good guy.
But he was – I just thought you just stick kids into these races and then you just sit back and drink coffee.
No, this is strategy.
There's legit strategy in there. Especially if you have enough kids. But, obviously, if you don't have
– You don't, though. See, that's the thing about with track is you don't need 50. You don't need 20.
Right.
You need, like, 7 or 8 good kids because track is all based on points.
Yeah.
So if you get one stud that can do 4 events – and go to the state meet and win 4 events, that's 40 points.
Right.
It's hard to get that. So for me, my mentality when I was coaching track at Macaulay and Portland, I was like, listen, I don't need 50 kids because that's hard to coach.
Sure.
I just need 20. And then at the end of the day, before the state championship, I'm going to be down to like 10.
Yeah.
And then you just have to figure out where to put them.
Yeah.
And my second year at Macaulay, we were state runner-up. With 7 kids.
Good God.
State runner-up, Macaulay.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
When was that?
That was during the time when Macaulay came out of nowhere with basketball.
Yeah.
And
they had the best recruiting class ever.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And but I was able to I was able to utilize that by recruiting the basketball players and said, hey, listen, you can go play softball. I just need you to come over and throw a javelin.
Right.
That's it. You just got to come to practice one day a week. Let me work with you in the javelin because I knew that she could place the states.
Yeah. All right. We're going to call this a podcast. What do you guys think?
I'm good with that.
Great.
All right. Thank you guys for coming on.
I'm sorry. Were you talking?
Except for you, Hutch. Oh, thanks, okay. Everybody else.
All right. You're not welcome.